Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1866, with a release date of May 17, 2013. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Hamvention 2013 is here. D-Star and kids become an important part of Hamvention. Russian radar invades 80 meters. A California ham seeks signatures for a petition on public warning legislation. The Hurricane Watch Net says it could use more net control stations. Registrations for the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend ramp up. And the tale of some newly developed self-healing integrated circuits. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1866, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
It's Hamvention time in Dayton, Ohio. This is the gates at the Hera Arena swing open for this year's show of shows in amateur radio. And in an interview with Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, Hamvention spokesman Michael Coulter, WHCI, says there's a lot to look forward to, including some spectacular prizes.
Our prize committee has been really busy. They want to outdo where they did last year. Last year, we had over $80,000 in prizes. And this year, we want to surpass that.
But while prizes are an important aspect of Hamvention, so are other activities, with the many forums being front and center.
We get a lot of questions about forums and how important forums are to amateur radio. And a lot of people just love to mix their day with sit down, watch a forum, and learn something. All that information can be found at our website, www.hamvention.org.
As this year's theme is the DX Hamvention, there are a lot of visitors from outside the United States.
We have people coming from literally all over the world, a large contingency coming in from China this year, as we had a large group from India last year, and of course, Qatar, throughout the Middle East, Europe, very strong, you know, South America, throughout Africa. And that's the big thing about amateur radio. When you see people with a call that you know is a foreign call, most of these people I find are just absolutely delighted to get to know you and to talk to them face to face.
According to Coulter, it's not easy for some foreign visitors to get to the Hamvention, but planners are always ready to assist.
People come from a lot of these countries. They need actually written invitations. The city of Dayton, city of Trotwood, the counties around have all chipped in to help us to make amateur radio operators from all over the world feel welcome, sometimes as many as four letters to one person just so they can get their visa.
And says Coulter, the Hamvention would not be possible without the volunteers who make it happen.
This is an all-volunteer undertaking from the general chairman all the way through. We do contract for some emergency services, for bus services, lease out the Hera Arena. But as far as the nitty-gritty work and the planning and all that is done by volunteers.
Coulter adds that not all of the volunteers live in the Dayton area.
We are really proud of our amateur radio community here. And we're also proud of the fact that there are amateur radio operators that come from all of the United States and other parts of the world just to help volunteer for this great event.
By the way, if you're in Dayton for Hamvention 2013 and find yourself in need of any kind of assistance, simply dial your 2-meter mobile or handheld to the repeater pair of 14634N and 14694Out. That's the official repeater for Hamvention. Its call is W8BI and no PL tone is required. Okay, now time for our reporters in Dayton to grab their audio recorders and go to work. You'll hear their reports on Hamvention 2013 beginning next week. Kids and D-Star were to be a part of Hamvention 2013's activities, this as the Texas Interconnect team announces that for the Hamvention weekend, Reflector 33 Bravo will officially be the Dayton Kids Reflector. Megan McClellan, K5MEM, will spearhead the project from the ARRL Youth Booth starting Friday morning and continuing during show hours on Saturday and Sunday. The objective is to give future young hams an opportunity to experience the fun and excitement of talking with someone in a faraway place using the magic of amateur radio. The participants in the youth area will have access to handheld radios and a DVAP and will operate under the supervision of an experienced control operator. And even if you're not at this year's Hamvention, you can assist in this effort by connecting using D-Star to Reflector 33 Bravo during the event hours Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if nobody's talking, give them a call. Remember, for any QSO to begin, it takes someone calling the first CQ. One product at Dayton that likely won't make headline reviews, but which will certainly be of interest to satellite enthusiasts, is a new version of AMSAT G6LVB Tracker. The new unit replaces the original amber-only LCD display with an OLED, or organic light-emitting diode display, and will be available in blue, green, and amber. The new display offers a high visibility contrast with a wide angle of view. For more information and a photo showing the old and new displays, you can go to amsat.org. In other news, the latest IARU monitoring system newsletter reports the Russian over-the-horizon radar that has invaded the 3.5 megahertz band is still very active. The interfering radar system is believed to be located in the area of Makhachkala in the Caspian Sea and transmits simultaneously between 3.515 to 3.545 and 3.560 to 3.590 megahertz. As a result, amateur radio and other services are suffering interference during the evening hours. The German and Dutch telecommunications regulators have been informed and have been asked to intercede. The ARRL letter says that with the 2013 hurricane season approaching, the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida, and the Hurricane WatchNet are gearing up for what could be a very active storm season. And in preparation for what Mother Nature might have in store, the Hurricane WatchNet is seeking new members who can serve as net control stations. For those not aware, the Hurricane WatchNet provides on-the-ground, real-time weather data from amateur radio operators who volunteer their time to monitor their own properly calibrated home weather stations. The hams then report the data collected to the Hurricane WatchNet, which in turn forwards it to WX4NHC, which is the amateur radio station at the National Hurricane Center. For more information on the role played by hams in this vital life-saving service and how you can become a part of it, take your web browser to tinyurl.com/hurricane-net-2013. And before we go any further, a correction to the source credit in last week's newscast concerning the story about Germany's DARC and Belgium's UBA supporting amateur radio in Tunisia. In the print edition, we gave the source credit to an organization called ARAT. Well, it turns out the group's actual name is ASTRA, which stands for Association Tunisienne des Radio Amateurs. That translated into English is the Association of Tunisian Radio Amateurs. How the credit, which was only seen in the print edition, got typoed remains a bit of a mystery, but we're sincerely grateful to our listeners and readers across Europe and in Tunisia for bringing this discrepancy to our attention. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W8BI repeater of the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, serving the Hamvention city of Dayton, Ohio. Richard Rudman, W6TIA, who is a core member of the Broadcast Warning Working Group, has posted an online petition urging Congress and the executive branch of government to enact legislation for a national public warning strategy. This so emergency public information is always coordinated with other emergency response measures. In the petition, Rudman and the Broadcast Warning Working Group advocate that emergency public information be treated as a true response resource within the culture of emergency management professionals and to be legislated by Congress. And in an interview with Amateur Radio Newsline, W6TIA explained the importance of getting the government to pay attention to this special need.
The petition was started because we feel that two pieces of legislation that died in the last session should be brought back and strengthened so that, for one thing, there is a unified strategy for emergency management and tying it to emergency public information, including warnings.
The legislation referred to by W6TIA was based on the Partnership for Public Warning report titled A National Strategy for Integrated Public Warning and Capability. He noted that this was reinforced with language from the previous legislative attempts and feels this proposal can finally give real, wide-ranging value and meaning to FEMA's Common Alerting Protocol warning tool called the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. Rudman tells Newsline that he hopes to collect between 100 and 200 signatures. He then plans to present them to what he terms as key people in Congress who supported past attempts at such legislation in the hope of getting them to introduce them again and get them passed. W6TIA has about 75 signatures so far. You can read and sign the petition at tinyurl.com/true-response-resource or tinyurl.com/epi-strategy. A decision by American Tower Corporation to evict an amateur radio emergency communication system from a tower the company recently acquired in New Mexico has both the sponsoring radio club and many of the people working in local emergency services very concerned. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP.
The repeater in question is located on Buck Mountain overlooking the community of Reducio, New Mexico, and is operated by the Sierra Blanca Amateur Radio Club. The equipment was installed on the tower in 2004, and except for when the tower suffered some damage 3 or 4 years ago, the repeater has been used continuously for emergencies, such as the Little Bear Fire in June of 2012 and the Rio Reduso flood in July of 2008. Tony Davis is president of White Mountain Search and Rescue. He says that he learned late Wednesday, May 8th, that the tower holding the amateur radio repeater that is owned and maintained by Rick Soule, K5RIC, has been sold to American Tower Corporation. Despite attempts by Soule to negotiate an agreement, American Tower has decided to terminate amateur radio use of the facility, effective immediately. Davis said that there are other towers near the same location, but they are largely occupied. The acting fire chief, Harlan Vincent, also serves as the village emergency services manager. He says that he's not happy about the decision of the Boston-based American Tower Company. He noted that the community relies heavily on ham operators in the time of emergency. He said that when emergency service repeaters go down, the ham radio repeaters are still functioning and able to get information from point A to point B. According to a local newspaper article reporting the repeater's eviction, this system is used by amateur operators not just in Lincoln County. It also provides coverage to Ontario, Chaves, and Eddy County, and as far away as the panhandle of Texas and into the city of El Paso. Davis and Doug Thompson, W5DET, who is president of the Sierra Blanca Amateur Radio Club, has sent an open letter for publication in the local newspaper to the chairman, president, and chief executive officer of the American Tower Corporation, asking him to reconsider the company's stance. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
More on the story can be found online at tinyurl.com/repeater-evicted. The FCC has upheld a $15,000 fine against an Oregon resident for allegedly operating an unlicensed radio station. Following up on a complaint from a local broadcaster in 2011, the Portland office of the Enforcement Bureau traced the signal on 97.9 megahertz in Prineville, Oregon, to the residence of Joshua McMurchies. A police officer accompanied the FCC agent to the address where the FCC agent inspected the station and issued McMurchie a notice of unlicensed operation. Following another complaint in 2012, an agent again T-hunted the source of the signal to McMurchie's residence and found a transmitter there. The commission said that McMurchie admitted operating the station and offered to surrender the transmitter. Last July, the FCC issued McMurchie a notice of apparent liability in the amount of $15,000, raising it by $5,000 from the base amount of $10,000 because the unlicensed transmissions continued even after McMurchie was ordered to cease operation. But in its May 9th release, the FCC says that McMurchie never answered the original notice of apparent liability. Based on that and the evidence before it, the agency has now issued a forfeiture order of $15,000, giving him 30 days to pay, or the case may be referred to the Justice Department for collection. A small but popular magazine targeted at those who operate 50 megahertz and above is on the block. This as Andy Barter, G8ATD, announces his intention to retire from publishing the currently UK-based VHF Communications magazine. According to Barter, he has published VHF Communications magazine for the past 13 years and now wants to retire. He says he'll publish all four issues in 2013, but if anyone in the group would like to take over publication of the magazine from 2014 on and give it a new lease on life, please contact him. Barter says that the job of publishing involves translating articles from the German magazine UKW Berichte, plus finding additional articles to fill the VHF communications. In addition, there's the work of producing the magazine, getting it printed and distributed, handling subscriptions, plus orders for back issues and the like. The current circulation of the magazine is 349, with just 80 of those from the UK. If this interests you, please contact G8ATD by email to andy@vhfcom.co.uk. As part of the ARRL Centennial Celebration in 2014, the League's Public Relations Committee is sponsoring an I Am the ARRL video contest. The committee is looking for pairs of short video clips featuring ARRL members. One clip should show the radio amateur on the radio, while the other should show the same ham in his or her work setting, saying who they are and that they like ham radio and that they are the ARRL. As explained by ARRL Public Relations Manager Alan Pitts, W1AGP, an example might be a car mechanic in coveralls working over an engine who looks at the camera and says, "I'm Henry Smith, N0XCC. I like to talk to people in exotic countries, and I am the ARRL." This clip would then be paired with a shot of him at home talking on the radio. Pitt says that the ARRL is looking for videos that communicate that you are that guy or gal down the street and that you're an important part of the ARRL. WD1AGP also adds that with Field Day coming up next month, there's a great opportunity for filming clips. If this project interests you, you can find out more online at tinyurl.com/ARRL-second-century-video. And if you're an amateur radio space enthusiast, mark down November 1st to the 3rd as the dates for this year's AMSAT Space Symposium. The venue will be the Marriott Hobby Airport Hotel, not far from the grounds of NASA's Johnson Space Flight Center in Houston, Texas, which is the home of the famed ham radio station W5RRR. The AMSAT annual meeting will be held in conjunction with the Space Symposium. This will provide you with an opportunity to hear about AMSAT's plans for the future and voice your own thoughts and opinions to organization's board of directors, members, and other officials. Over the coming months, both the AMSAT Journal and AMSAT News Service will be issuing timely updates on plans for this year's Space Symposium. More information will also be available online at www.amsat.org. On the social scene, word that the Old Virginia Amateur Radio Club will be holding its 39th Ham Fest in Manassas, Virginia, June 9th, and you're invited to be part of the festivities. This year, in partnership with the 4-H Club, the gathering will be hosting a youth lounge for teen and preteen youth, complete with on-the-air ham radio demonstrations. There will also be a number of educational events to foster amateur radio awareness among the younger members of the community. Andrea Hartledge, KG4IUM, will be organizing and chairing the Youth Lounge. Hartledge was the 2004 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year and a former ARRL Vice Director. She's nationally known as a promoter of youth and amateur radio and is an active member of the Youth in the Second Century Committee sponsored by the American Radio Relay League. More about the Old Virginia Amateur Radio Club Ham Fest and its dedicated youth activities can be found online at www.manassashamfest.org. Organizers say they hope to see you there. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur from the United States of America. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Google may be trying to create an experimental wireless network covering its Mountain View, California headquarters. This in a move that some analysts say could be a sign that the company may be planning the creation of super-fast wireless networks in other locations that would allow people to connect to the World Wide Web using mobile devices. Google recently submitted an application to the Federal Communications Commission asking for an experimental license to create an experimental radio service with a 2-mile radius covering its headquarters. The network would only provide coverage for devices built to access frequencies from 2524 to 2625 megahertz. This is spectrum which could work well in densely populated areas and which mobile operators in China, Brazil, and Japan are already building wireless networks using. This in turn means that compatible devices can eventually be manufactured. According to Communications News, much of Google's application is confidential, but it does say that the first deployment of the experimental network would take place inside a specific building on Google's property. That building reportedly houses the company's fiber team, which is part of the Google Access unit that has introduced high-speed wired internet and video in Kansas City. A Google spokesperson declined to comment on the purpose of the application, saying the company regularly experiments with new ideas. You'll find more on the web at tinyurl.com/google-2-ghz. The battle for the most registrations for the 2013 International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend Leadership appears to be, at this moment, a tie between Australia and Germany, with 40 registrations each. This out of more than 220 from 30 countries around the world. Looking at other nations, the United States has registered 23 lighthouses and lightship entities. It's followed by England at 18, Argentina with 12, Ireland and Scotland with 9 each, and with Canada, the Netherlands, and Sweden at 8 apiece. With registration only at about the halfway mark, it so far appears that the number of entities planning to take part is ahead of last year at the same time. If you plan to activate a lighthouse or lightship for this fun operating event and want to register it, take your web browser to www.illw.net. This year's International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend takes place the weekend of August 17th and 18th, and planners say they hope you'll be there. Radio and television Marti broadcast to Cuba from the United States government resumed on Monday, April 22nd. This after a trash can fire forced a temporary evacuation of the headquarters of the Office of Cuba Broadcasting in Miami the day before. According to the United States Broadcasting Board of Governors, the building that houses Marti and its website reportedly sustained damage due to an accidental fire caused by a lighted cigarette left in a container in a designated smoking area outside the building. While windows cracked due to the heat, no one was injured and sprinklers were automatically set off. Carlos Garcia Perez, director of the Office of Cuba Broadcasting, says he was grateful for a quick response from firefighters and for the continued work of the station's broadcasters through the ordeal. In Cuba, Radio Marti is available on 1080 AM and also on 1260 AM as Radio Caracol. On the air, keep an ear open for Jeff Powell, M1EDF. He'll be on the air as GB4PEN through the 24th of May, this to commemorate the crew of the United Kingdom lifeboat, the Penley. According to Wikipedia, the lifeboat Penley sank off the coast of Cornwall in the UK on December 19, 1981, this after it had gone to the aid of the vessel the Union Star after its engines failed in heavy seas. The story goes that after the Penley had managed to rescue four people, that both vessels were lost with all hands. In all, 16 people died, including 8 volunteer lifeboatmen. M1EDF says that he'll be operating on 160, 80, 40, and 30 meters using CW only. QSLs go direct to M1EDF, who adds that any donations received with QSLs will benefit the United Kingdom's Royal National Lifeboat Institution. More online at qrz.com/db/GB4PEN. And the State of Franklin Friendship Net is a brand new regional net serving East Tennessee, Southwest Virginia, and Northwest North Carolina. This new RagChew net is held on several linked local repeaters in the area and also worldwide via Echolink. You're invited to join in every Thursday evening at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. More details and a list of net repeaters and Echolink nodes can be found at facebook.com/stateoffranklinnet. And State of Franklin is all one word. NDX7Z1HL will be active from Saudi Arabia until May 31st as HZ1FOC. He's active on the various HF bands. QSL only, Herbert Lennertz, HZ1FOC, P.O. Box 85661, Riyadh, 11612, Saudi Arabia. PB2T is currently operational stroke TF from Iceland on the high frequency bands. If you make contact, please QSL via his home call. OD5SK is currently active from Jordan as JY8KS. He's reportedly to be active on the HF bands only, QSL via IZ8CLM. OH6VM will be on the air from Market Reef June 2nd through the 5th. He'll be using the call sign OJ0VM, also on the various high-frequency bands, QSL OH6VM. HA0NAR will be active as 3D2AR from Viti Levu Island in the Fiji Island Group sometime in October. His operation will likely be on 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL via his home call. And for updates, please visit www.ha0nar.hu on the World Wide Web. And lastly, G3SXW and G3TXF are on the air from Jersey Island on all of the HF bands using the call sign GH4FOC for the FOC commemorative operation, as well as GJ3SXW and GJ3TXF. QSLs for GH4FOC go via G3SWH, while GJ3SXW go via G3SXW, and GJ3TXF via G3TXF. All calls can be either paper or electronic using Logbook of the World. And finally this week, indestructible electronics are a step closer to reality thanks to engineers at the California Institute of Technology who have developed what they are calling self-healing integrated chips. Amateur Radio Newsline, Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK.
The team from High Speed Integrated Circuits Laboratory at Caltech's Division of Engineering and Applied Science repeatedly blasted tiny power amplifiers with a high-power laser, vaporizing many of their components. They then watched the chips develop their own workaround in less than a second. The new integrated circuits are so small that 76 of them, including the amplifier and everything needed to heal it, can fit on one penny. The amplifiers developed by the team use on-chip sensors that monitor temperature, current, voltage, and power. These sensors send the information to a custom application-specific integrated circuit, or ASIC, which is a separate central processor on the same chip, which functions as the system's brain. the ASIC evaluates the sensor information about the amplifier's performance, decides what adjustments need to be made to the system's actuators, and makes those changes. The unit was designed to get to the optimum state for all actuators in any situation without outside intervention. The benefits of this approach go beyond overcoming severe damage. Because of self-sensing, these amplifiers used about half as much power as those without the self-healing capability, and performance was more predictable and reproducible. In addition to working around damaged parts of the circuits, the amplifier is self-healing. It can repair static variation, which can occur across components, and long-term aging problems that arise over time. Chips such as these are useful for next-generation communications, imaging, sensing, and radar applications. By showing successful self-healing, this shows us it could soon be used in more everyday cutting-edge electronic systems such as cell phones and maybe someday even in ham radio gear. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Essek, K9VIK, in Zion, Illinois.
Research on this project was funded by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, and the Air Force Research Laboratory. More on the story is online at tinyurl.com/self-healing-chips. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, Australia's WIA News, and the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. And a reminder that there are only about 2.5 weeks left to nominate a young ham age 18 or under for this year's Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. The closing date is midnight, May 30th, and any nominations postmarked or sent to us electronically after that date will not be counted for this year's judging. This year's winner will receive an expense-paid trip to the Huntsville Ham Fest courtesy of Yaesu USA, a week at Space Camp Huntsville from CQ Magazine, a prize of ham radio gear, and a plaque commemorating the event from us here at the Amateur Radio Newsline. Full details and the nominating form are on our website at arnewsline.org/YHOTY. We look forward to receiving your nominations. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in South Mississippi, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.